Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now I'm joined in the studio by Roderick O'Gorman, Green Party leader and Minister for Children, Equality, Disability and Integration. You're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for coming in. So €560, this is what you're calling for new parents to be paid, a once-off payment on the birth of a child. This, you want this to be in this year's budget?
Yeah, it's a proposal we'll be bringing forward to the budgetary negotiations over the next number of weeks. We're very aware of that. The extra pressures, the extra financial pressures that all new parents face on the arrival of a newborn, new cot, new baby seat, new steriliser, all those really basic but quite expensive pieces of equipment. So the idea is that alongside the initial child benefit payment of €140, there'd be a boost for that first payment, and we're talking about quadrupling it, so bring it up to €560 for that first payment, just to, I suppose, give a very clear indication to parents that we're supporting them and their newborn in those first weeks in a very tangible way, and providing some more money so they can meet those extra costs.
There was something like this previously back in 2005. People might remember Brian Cowan's government gave €1,000 to parents. I mean, are you concerned at all that it might bring to mind the Fianna Fáil boom times to people who are listening to it?
No, I think this is targeted at a time when we know every family needs that little bit of extra support. So it's that once-off payment when the first child benefit payment comes in, knowing that all those extra costs are building up. Mm-hmm. And I suppose for myself, over the last 4 years as children's minister, my core goal has been to support parents and support children. And we think that introducing this payment, this boost payment at the first child benefit payment, is something that will have a very tangible, very meaningful impact for parents at a time when bills are racking up.
Now, how far are you going to push this with the Finance Minister, Jack Chambers? Is it a red line issue for you?
Well, it's an issue that we're bringing forward into the negotiations. It's something that I'll raise with Minister Chambers, with Minister Donoghue, and with the other two leaders as well. But we think at a time where we have the opportunity to provide investments, to provide support, this is a really meaningful support to a group of parents who really need this extra financial support.
It's just interesting to hear, you know, the different strategies at play here, because Micheál Martin last week said to the Daily Mail that child benefit is going to increase. Are you saying you want to see this 560 on top of the increase? Do you think both can happen?
Well, I'm bringing forward on behalf of the Green Party this idea of a boost payment at the start. The Taoiseach is bringing forward his own proposals as well. And look, we'll have to look at all of these proposals in the scope.
Do you think both can happen?
Well, we have to look at it in the scope of all the other financial demands that are out there right now and proposals for additional spending. On behalf of the Green Party, we think this is the most meaningful measure that government can introduce now, targeting a group of parents, new parents, who really need additional support.
Because with all of these suggestions happening from the different parties, we have the Fiscal Advisory Council saying that ministers are needlessly adding pressure onto the economy, that you're adding to inflation and ultimately to costs for Irish households. Do you disregard that message?
No, we don't disregard anything from the Fiscal Council. Well, the point I'd make is the inflation in our economy is as a result of the pressures that the war in Ukraine created 2 years ago. Those inflationary pressures are departing, and that's good. But there is increased costs that are built in now and that many families are facing. And it's important that government bears that in mind and does what it can to support families. Some of those supports will be on a once-off basis, and we're lucky to be in a position to be able to do that. But some of them have to recognise that there are ongoing additional costs that individuals and families face. And we think the costs that families face on the arrival of a newborn. Those costs are always going to be there, and that's why we'd like to see this change built in on a permanent basis.
And I asked you if that was a red line. You said it's a suggestion, a proposal from the Green Party. One area where there did seem to be a red line, though, was the residential zoned land tax. And we heard from the Green Party in late August on this, and there was great upset that it might be delayed, postponed again because of this issue around actively farmed land. Now, have you been told that the Department of Finance has found a workaround so that that tax can go ahead and actively farmed land will be excluded from it?
Well, we've been very clear that we think that where somebody is hoarding land, land that is zoned and land that is serviced, if they're not willing to build on it themselves or sell it to somebody who will build on it, there has to be a financial penalty. And that's what the land hoarding tax is about. It was deferred last year. We believe it needs to come in this year. We have and will continue to engage with the Minister for Finance in terms of ensuring its delivery in this year's budget. It'll form part of our discussions, I've no doubt, over the next number of weeks. But we're very clear in the Green Party that if we are serious as a country in tackling the housing crisis, we should use every tool available to us. And in Housing for All, it was very clearly identified that a mechanism to force people who are hanging on to land that is usable is important. And that's why we want to see this tax.
And your colleague Oisin Smith told us, you know, we're talking about 230,000 housing units here that could be built on that land. But do you believe that actively farmed land should be exempt from the 3% tax?
Oh, we were very clear about that. This tax is not about impacting farmers who are working their own land and will continue to work their own land. They were never the target of this tax. This tax is designed to target people who are hoarding land, people who have the planning, who have the services and are hanging on to see the value of that land go up.
But it is for them
that we want to see. I know the Department of Finance are working in terms of a carve out for farmers who are actively farming their land. We're very happy to see that. We want to see that because this tax is never designed to hit those farmers.
OK, but it hasn't been sorted out yet.
What I'm saying is we are in the process of sorting it out as a government. And I'm very clear on behalf of the Green Party that as a government that is absolutely committed to addressing the housing crisis, we need to show that we have this tool to bring more land into circulation ready for implementation post-budget 25.
And that is a red line issue for you, isn't it?
It's a really important step for us as a government. I will find it hard whenever, and no doubt we'll talk about general election in the next few minutes, but whenever we are going out into a general election, I think as a government we'll find it really hard to say we've done everything we can if we left this taxation measure on the shelf.
But we will know about this on the 1st of October, won't we? Whether it's going ahead or not.
It will be announced in the budget speech, yes. So
my question to you is, if it's deferred again, would you be prepared to pull your participation in this government?
Well, that's why we're working very closely with the other parties to make sure
it is implemented. Yeah, but if it's not sorted out.
I think, and the Green Party believe, that we have to demonstrate that we have used every mechanism possible to bring usable land, buildable land into circulation. And we see the land hoarding tax as a key measure in that regard. That's the position that I'll be bringing to the two other party leaders and the Finance and Public Expenditure Ministers in negotiations over the next number of
weeks. You're just not going to accept a further deferral of that tax?
We think that this tax needs to be implemented as part of budget 2025.
Listen, I want to talk to you about childcare. We've had a number of providers on the programme over the last number of weeks. Some of them say they can't keep the lights on. I mean, they're accepting funding for the state, but it's just they can't make ends meet. We have parents then who can't find a place, can't afford to pay for it. Do you accept that there are fundamental structural problems with our childcare model?
Well, when I became Minister for Children, I set out three clear goals. Reduce the costs for parents, improve pay for childcare professionals and improve investment to childcare providers, childcare businesses. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to achieve very significant progress on all three of those areas. Half the average childcare cost for parents, two pay agreements, first time ever there's mandated levels of pay for childcare professionals and core funding, €330 million this year invested directly into services. But I would also say, as minister for 4 years, I do think the state needs to be taking an even greater role in the delivery and the provision of childcare. And that's why what the Green Party will be proposing in our manifesto is the ECC programme. That should become a legal right, that every child has that right legally to the 2 years of a free preschool. And in order to make sure we can deliver that in areas where there is low supply of childcare places, the state actually starts to step in and looks to provide childcare directly alongside community and private providers.
Does the early years education programme become a function of the Department of Education then under that model?
I actually don't think which department is doing it is the key issue here.
I think it sends a very strong statement. If this country is saying, as part of your overall education, you don't just have primary and secondary now, you have your two years before you start primary school.
But I would argue that ECC is already very clearly part, because it uses ASHTR, it uses SHIELD, it uses the same curriculum. Mm-hmm. So it is very much built in to the education curriculum already. The big difference is that, unlike primary school, a kid doesn't have a legal right to those 2 years. So that would be the first step that I'd implement, deliver that by legal right, as a legal right, but recognising there are places in the country where there is gaps in supply. We don't have enough supply of early learning and care places. Recognising that right now, neither the community or the private sector providers are able to meet all of that demand, I think the state actually has to start providing it directly.
Listen, if you are expecting a baby, you're probably going to try and put your name down for a creche before that baby is born. That's what we've heard here. And even at that, you're not guaranteed to get a place. Now, there's something wrong, isn't there, when that is the state of affairs?
And that's why I believe we need to have the state more involved, ensuring that in those areas where we don't have enough capacity, where we don't have enough spaces, the state actually becomes a provider there. We've taken really important steps over the last 4 years. One of the big pressures is actually staff right now, because staff aren't sufficiently paid in early years. I've taken steps to address that by bringing in two pay agreements backed up by state money to childcare providers so they can pay their staff better. And that's something that I'm looking at in mm-hmm. budget 2025 as well.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, having looked at this over the last 4 years, having done as much as I can to improve the existing system, I think whoever's in government next, and if the Green Party is in government in the next 5 years, this will be a central element for us, having greater state involvement through the direct provision of childcare.
Well, there have been calls for a complete public childcare model in Ireland. Is that something that you would support?
We have brilliant childcare providers from the private sector and from the community sector who are doing an amazing job right now. I think the state needs to continue to use the mechanisms to support them, like core funding, like the Equal Start system, the DESH model for early years that started last week. 30,000 children benefiting now from extra supports through that initiative I funded mm-hmm. through last year's budget. I think in areas where we don't have supply, I think that's where the state needs to step in. So it's the state working alongside existing providers to make sure everybody has the opportunity for early learning.
But not a fully funded public childcare model. You're not saying that that is on your agenda or would be part of your manifesto going into any election?
I think in the next 5 years, it is about delivering extra capacity in areas that need it and continuing to grow the overall level of funding. I'll have doubled state investment in childcare over the last 4 years. It was 636 million euro when I became minister. After this budget, it'll be over 1.2 billion euro. That's a huge level of increased state investment. And we have more state management as well now in terms of the
fee freeze. But you must be very disappointed then when you hear operators saying we're opting out of the state funding model because we can't afford to be in it.
Well, what I hear is parents, and look, I've had over the last week's friends sending me pictures of their childcare fee statements and seeing the reduction mm-hmm. that they're actually enjoying
because
of the NCS.
But it's access to places, and it's the fact that those businesses, and they are businesses, are saying we cannot be part of this anymore.
Well, the number of places available has grown over the last 4 years. The number of new services opening has grown over the last number of 4 years. So while some individual services have issues in terms of core funding, last year, 94.5% of services signed up to core funding. Mm-hmm. We're looking at our core funding sign-up rates now. They're the same as they were this time last year.
Operators are not leaving, is what you're saying?
We're saying at this stage, we're seeing the same level of sign up as we were seeing this time last year. Okay. And I think even one of the providers who'd been setting concerns over the summer, certainly at least one of those services have now opted into core funding. So core funding is a very significant amount of state support that I introduced. It's 331 million yep. euro this year. And that is there because it is needed. It is needed. It is important that the state is providing that investment, because for years, Ireland didn't invest in early years. We're playing catch up by decades compared to the other European member states.
The other part of your brief, integration, we've been waiting for a long time to hear where the new reception centres will be for asylum seekers. We know Thornton Hall in Dublin is one. Can you tell us where the others will be?
Well, Thornton Hall, work started on that 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, and we'll be hoping to provide accommodation there in the next number of weeks. We have the new accommodation strategy that's looking at the delivery of accommodation on state-provided land, and we've been able to do that in Crooks Ling, in Shrudder, in Ballyogan over the last number of weeks, which has allowed us to provide accommodation much more rapidly. We're looking at other sites, some of the sites we're already using, so for example, a site in Athlone, a site on the Limerick Clare border, mm-hmm. and we have a number of sites where we are looking at purchasing sites from the private sector, so we can ensure the delivery of state-owned land. Those negotiations are ongoing. I'm not going to name sites until I'm definite about their use, because we know from history where there's even speculation about the use of site for accommodation, it has placed those sites at some level of
risk. Do you have a timeline on that? Because we were promised this much earlier in the year, and we still don't have sight of those sites.
Let's be clear. When I published the comprehensive accommodation strategy, I said the first step was the use of state-owned land to provide emergency accommodation. And we've done that. We've provided over 1,500 spaces now for applicants, many of whom were previously unaccommodated in the sites mm-hmm. that I've mentioned to you earlier on. So that was the first step. The second step then was the delivery with the private sector of refurbished commercial buildings.
But you do accept, we have been waiting a long time for these sites to be identified.
I'm not sure 5 months is a long time with respect in terms of how I
Catherine
the phasing
Day said
of this.
In 2021 that we should have these centres built. Heading into 2025.
Yeah, and in 2022, my department had to lead the state's response to the biggest humanitarian crisis we've ever seen. And I've always been very clear, when my department had to pivot to meeting the housing needs of 100,000 Ukrainians, it did mean that other parts of our work did get delayed. I can't deny that fact. But it did enable us to meet the needs of 100,000 Ukrainians. Right. And even, you know, when the Taoiseach was meeting President Zelensky there last week, that's something that's recognised there as a really important contribution by Ireland.
We're not as welcoming as we were to Ukrainians, and they've had that experience in many places where they've been told to move on from their accommodation.
I don't think that's a fair comment to make. I think every European country has changed the level of supports that's been provided towards Ukrainians. Here in Ireland, in an area I have three hotels that are half full, I think in terms of ensuring value for money for the state, it's not illegitimate for us to look to consolidate where we provide this temporary accommodation.
Listen, we've touched on the election. When would you like to have the next general election, if it was in your gift, November or March?
Well, we as a government have work still to do. Within my own department, we're eager to pass the legislation that would allow the Leave Our Leave campaign, women who've suffered a serious illness during their maternity leave, to be able to hold on to their maternity leave. As a Green Party, we want to see the Marine Protected Areas legislation
passed.
So
when would you like to see the election happen?
So I'm eager for the government to serve its term so final pieces of legislation can be passed. So I suppose what I'm saying is I'm not rushing to hold for an election to take place. I want to see delivery for as long as possible.
All right. Roderick O'Gorman, Green Party leader, thank you very much for coming
in. Claire.